The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, and I am joined on the show by Craig Burley, Shaka Hislop, and Sid Lowe. And you might have guessed it, we are still talking about Lionel Messi. Now, the latest is he still does want away from Barcelona, but he's hoping to leave on good terms and not through the back door. Although you can sugarcoat it all you like, Sid, it does still mean that this is the Barcelona side that will be losing Lionel Messi.
Exactly. And really the reason why we're at this point now, of course, is because it's one way of trying to find a solution. The legal framework that Messi hoped might mean that he could walk away for free, I think he recognises the difficulty of that, he recognises the risks inherent in that, and City are not particularly keen to go down that route. So what happens? Well, you get into a position in which basically you have to find some sort of solution. There's a lovely Spanish phrase which is to suggest that two parties, or in this case I suppose three because there's two clubs and a player, are condemned to understand each other. And I think that's the situation we're in now. There is no way of resolving this without some sort of negotiations, without some sort of discussions. What we don't know, of course, is how they'll play out. What we don't know, of course, is how they will find, a point of common interest amongst them. But the reality now is the situation, unless Messi changes his mind, is that City and Barcelona will eventually have to come to some sort of agreement.
Craig, it's looking as though Manchester City could be the destination, and that would be a Pep and Messi reunion. Is this the right move for him? Is this what we were hoping for if he has to leave?
Well, I think we have to stay somewhat impartial here, Kay, and say we didn't hope he goes to Manchester City. But in terms of is it the right move? Because there's going to be, obviously, there's a lot of suitors out there that would clearly take this guy in a heartbeat. But clearly we're looking at clubs. There's a limited number of clubs in terms of the finances. Then you look at the fact the mess Barcelona have been in, hence they didn't win La Liga. They were embarrassed in the Champions League. And it's a total rebuild at Barcelona. So what he doesn't want to do is go to a club that are also in the middle of, you know, a total rebuild. And whilst we know Manchester City have issues, particularly in the defensive area, it's clear that they will go out, I would be staggered if they don't, and try and address the positions that really cost them dearly this season, both in the league and in the Champions League, when you saw that game against Lyon. So when you think about playing staff, when you think about the guys that they've got on the staff, when you think about the coaching staff as well, and all the relationships that go with it, I think Manchester City, if he goes to England, is as good a fit as any.
And for you, Shaka, this does look as though we know Messi is hoping to win that Champions League again. We know Pep Guardiola is hoping to do so too. But with Manchester City, is this the key for each other? Their combined success could finally take them to that Champions League ambition again?
Well, that's certainly what they're both hoping. I think the key to this is exactly how good Barcelona were under Pep Guardiola. And that's what Lionel Messi remembers. Listen, I know there were a number of other factors in there. Iniesta, Xavi, we could go on and on. But there's no question that I thought that was the best we'd seen of Barcelona. And probably Lionel Messi thinks about that time and wants to play it all over again one more time before he has to call it a day. Given City's own frustrations in the Champions League, it's a perfect fit for both player and club.
Let's be quite frank about it. If City addressed the centre-half positions and at least maybe one of the full-back positions, probably left-back, and they're able to cut a deal, like Sid was talking about, with Barcelona and do bring in Lionel Messi, he's going to have to win the Champions League, Pep Guardiola, at Manchester City. He's going to have to. There'll be no excuses. He stepped out that, you know, Barcelona bubble and he tried so hard at Bayern Munich and he wasn't able to pull it off, but still had success domestically. He's tried so hard and been so successful domestically with Manchester City, but have still fallen short at elite European level. There will be no excuses left unfortunately for him, if he is to pull this off and address one or two other areas, there will be no place left for him to turn if he doesn't pull it off. So this is a kind of shoot for everything kind of move. But I think he believes if they are to pull this off, that Messi has enough left in his legs and they have enough talent at Manchester City, that, boy, they're going to be tough to stop in that competition.
Craig, how do you think he'll fare in the Premier League?
Well, I think he'll have an absolute field day like what he had in Spain. You know, I do think the Spanish league is technically superior to the Premier League. But I don't think there's any issues for him, no matter where he goes. You know, you get time and space in a lot of games now. You know, and you go to places in Spain that are more physical than other sides. So there really isn't, I don't think, a million miles of difference between the two. The only thing I would say is that I think technically, and I've said this for a while, I think La Liga is a superior league when it comes to player ability.
Sid, how much will La Liga suffer without Lionel Messi in it?
Enormously. There's no two ways about that. Now, obviously, La Liga, in a way, if you look at the way that they've constructed their marketing in recent years, if you look at the way that they fought very hard, for example, to ensure a collective TV deal, they've been trying very hard to prepare an identity for themselves, if you like, that doesn't hang on Real Madrid and Barcelona. So in a way, they've been preparing for the moment when Cristiano Ronaldo leaves, which of course he did a couple of seasons ago, and when Messi leaves. That's not to say they're ready for it. And I also think it's worth making a point here, which is there's a big difference, both from Barcelona's point of view and also from the point of view of La Liga, to lose Lionel Messi because he retires. To lose him at the end of his career and say, well, look, this was arguably the greatest player of all time, who saw out his entire career at Barcelona, saw out his entire career at La Liga. But this is different, because this is you losing him to a competitor of Barcelona, who are also coached by your former coach, and to a competitor of La Liga. And I think in that sense, it does La Liga enormous damage. Now, we don't know, or at least more to the point, we can't calculate or judge just yet the economic impact of it. But in terms of, if you like, the identity, the self-esteem, the significance of the La Liga, it's huge. That said, you know, you do have to look at this in historical terms and say these are a huge club. Barcelona is an absolutely huge club. Obviously, Real Madrid is still a huge club. There are other good teams in Europe. Sevilla are Europa League champions again for a sixth year. So La Liga will be optimistic they can find a way through this. But this is problematic. And there's one other reason that it's problematic. And let's look away from Messi for a moment. The fact that a player as good as Rodrigo leaves a club as big as Valencia to go, with all the greatest respect to a club like Leeds, also tells you that there is a problem for La Liga. The financial muscle that La Liga has at the moment simply can't compete with the Premier League.
Okay, let's just bring a point. Go back to a point that Sid made earlier about, unless Messi changes his mind, you know, something's going to have to happen. And people, I think, will be watching this and think, well, what do you mean by that? What's Sid mean? And you know, why don't Barcelona just say, no, we're digging our heels in, you're going nowhere. What I think some people might understand, but some might not, is an unhappy player is a useless player, even one of Lionel Messi's ability. And Barcelona know this. Now, you know, Barcelona could dig their heels in and say, no, nobody's going on anywhere, just for the sake of it, and keep the guy. But they know they are not going to get anywhere near the return on the field like they've had. So, as Sid said, it really is in Messi's hands, because unless he changes his mind and everything gets fixed and resolved, and that seems unlikely, Barcelona have got a really unhappy player. And really unhappy players don't score 50 goals a year. They don't excite the fans every time they pull the strip on, because of that very reason. And so, you know, for people that might not understand why he's holding the cards and Barcelona are not really holding the cards here, I think that's a good point to make.
Yeah, definitely. And Shaka, PSG are also
there's some
said
other
to
factors.
So go on, Sid.
Sorry, Kay. Yeah, I was just going to just add in some factors to if you like, reinforce what Craig's saying. And here are some other factors for you. One is that this is Leo Messi. This is the best player in Barcelona's entire history. The last thing that they want is for his legacy to be even more sullied by this, for the departure, if and when it happens, to be even more nasty. So then there needs to be, I think, for everybody's sake, some, even if it's a facade, some degree of amicability about it. And remember the other factor. Messi was walking away because of a clause in his contract that allows him to do so. Well, that contract only has one more year to run. So what did Barcelona do? Force him to stay for a year, and then in a year's time he goes anyway in much more difficult circumstances. And there's another element to this which is really important, and it's economic. And deep down, given the choice between, as Craig says, an unhappy and probably underperforming, or certainly underperforming, probably not performing at all player, or the chance to save themselves close to 100 million euros on salary in the next year, and who knows, maybe get a transfer fee or some players in return for it. From Barcelona's point of view, in terms of the mechanics of it, now obviously emotionally now this is broken, it's gone, it's ruined. But in terms of the mechanics of it and trying to build and trying to rescue themselves, then in a way there's a certain degree of attraction for Barcelona, having reached this point, to now try and do some sort of deal with Manchester City, or indeed, I mean, we're talking about Manchester City, let's not forget that there are other clubs interested, but I think City are without doubt the front runners.
Yeah, you mentioned other clubs interested. Xhaka, PSG said to be one of them. There is a report that Neymar has been on the phone to his friend Messi. We know one of the reasons that Messi was so upset at Barcelona is because that move back for Neymar didn't happen. Could you see him maybe going into a club like PSG?
Listen, if money wasn't a factor, absolutely, yes. How good would Messi be in that front three that would include Neymar and Mbappe? But of course, there's financial fair play that PSG, even PSG, have to consider. Both Neymar and Mbappe are still on contracts. They've got another couple of years to run. The understanding was that PSG were preparing to sit down with them to discuss extension to those contracts. And just given the salary that Lionel Messi inevitably will be commanding, how do they make those numbers stack up? Albeit they've sold a few players this transfer window. But I just don't see how they make it all work unless they offload one of Neymar and Mbappe. Now, I don't know the figures myself, but that seems the most likely scenario, which leaves all kind of twists and turns to this, including who takes one of those two on, at what transfer fee, at what salary. That just adds another layer of difficulty to them bringing in somebody like Lionel Messi.
I think the other thing as well, Kay, to remember here, I'm not by any way downgrading the French league, because we've just seen some French teams do great in the Champions League. But there is a kudos to winning the Premier League, and there is a challenge to winning the Premier League, and we know the domination of PSG in France, and there has to be an element of that in it as well for Lionel Messi. He's had both European and domestic success big time at Barcelona. Manchester City are striving for the Champions League, but they're also striving to topple Liverpool from the top of that league as well. And Messi has seen this firsthand. He'll have seen what Liverpool have done this season. He saw it firsthand last year when Liverpool dismantled his Barcelona team in that second leg. So it's not just the coaching staff and Guardiola, the Champions League, the money. There's a big kudos to try and topple Liverpool from the top of that perch again. And I think all these factors will play into it in that decision.
Is Messi enough for it then, Craig, to topple Liverpool?
Well, I mean, I think City should address... If City don't address their defensive issues, even without Lionel Messi in the side, then big questions have to be asked. But I think, you know, even taking the little genius out of the equation, if City were to go and recruit properly in areas that they've struggled this year in particular, then it would have been it would be a close call with Liverpool again. So clearly adding somebody who is probably going to add somewhere between 25 and 40 plus goals to the team is going to be huge for them. But you know, it's going to be tough for Liverpool as well to reproduce what they have over the last couple of years. To go and do that for a third season. They missed out on the title with a point 2 years ago. Last season, they absolutely romped it. And they're going to have to do that for a third time. So, you know, that's the first thing and foremost that Manchester City have to do. And, of course, if you have somebody like him on the side, makes it a damn sight easier.
Meanwhile, Sid, back in Barcelona, Ronald Koeman's got the rebuild on. Now, obviously, nobody wanted to lose Messi, but he does know and has identified the other players that he would let follow Messi out of the door. But there is still said to be a lifeline for the likes of Jordi Alba, Sergio Busquets and Gerard Piqué. Are there any mistakes in the players he's letting go, like Luis Suarez or Rakitic, if that is to happen?
Well, look, I think everybody was quite clear that what Barcelona needed to do was a generational change. And so if you look at the players that have been told to go, Luis Suarez, Rakitic, Arturo Vidal and Samuel Umtiti, all of those are over 30 except Samuel Umtiti, who's had a couple of years of injury problems. Now, they've been told to look for clubs. That's not quite the same as rescinding their contracts, although I imagine there will be now negotiations to try and depart the club on a free transfer. I think there was a temptation as well. And remember when Bartomeu talked about untransferable players, he didn't mention those players that you just have. So Piqué, Sergio Busquets and Jordi Alba, who are all over 30. I think Koeman sees a place for them. I think the club will be more cautious with those players, of course, because they're youth teamers as well, and they were worried about how to handle them. Personally, I would have kept Piqué as well. I'm slightly less sure about the other two, but I guess it depends on what you have in the squad. It depends on what kind of departures you can find for those players, if indeed you have them. And as we understand it, Koeman has told Busquets, for example, that yes, you're part of the plans, yes, I want you here, but I'm not going to guarantee that you're going to be the first choice in that midfield pivot position. I suspect he may end up playing together with De Jong in a two, with a line of three in front rather than as midfield three. But I think that, look, Barcelona, truth be told, given the financial problems, are in a position where if anyone comes with a big offer for any of their players, just about, with the exception of Ter Stegen, then I think they would contemplate it.
Now, Busquets, though, said to be back in training early, Xhaka. Do you think that Koeman is having the right effect on some of these players who are fearing that they may not have a future or they may not be guaranteed starters at Barca next season?
Well, that's one way to look at it. But you understand Busquets coming back early, given the disappointments around Barcelona's season, and maybe he feels that he could have contributed more. So it's kind of part and parcel for the position, and I don't put that down exclusively to Koeman's arrival or the threat of departure for Sergio Busquets. He's just trying to get started, and I do hope more following his example.
Should they bring Coutinho back, Craig?
Well, I think they might have to, because he's part of it. Unless they loan him out again, I don't know what the plans are with him. But you know, just because Coutinho's had a bad time there doesn't mean that he can't be, you know, reinvigorated under a new coach. And one of the things that Koeman has said already was his frustration at watching how, in his opinion, Barcelona did not utilise to the best of his talent so far Frankie de Jong. And we've seen the young man struggle to showcase the considerable talents that he's got. And the pressure of going into a club like that can get to you when crowds got on your back at the Camp Nou, and you're a young man going to the new club. And so clearly Koeman has it in his mind, and as Sid touched on with Sergio Busquets and others, that he's going to try and build things around certain players. And I think Frankie de Jong is certainly one of them that he's going to try and mould the midfield around, because he certainly believes that Barcelona have nowhere near seen the best of him. And maybe he's got plans like that for Philippe Coutinho as well. So I think it'll have to be a wait and see for the little Brazilian.
Sid, Koeman's got previous in having a clear out. When we saw at Valencia, it didn't quite go as well. Is this any different?
Well, he will certainly hope it's very different. For those of our viewers who don't know, at Valencia he took on Santi Cañizares, David Albelda and Miguel Ángel N'Golo. The three of them had been basically put on a list of players that the club wanted out. And I think this is a really important point to make, by the way, is that Koeman went in to play, if you like, that kind of role of executioner at Valencia. But he did it on behalf of the club. It wasn't that he turned up, analysed his squad and decided that he wanted these three players out. He came in with the list already written for him, and he played that role. To the extent that David Albelda and Santi Cañizares ended up in court against Valencia. And as you say, will he want it to end differently? Yes. Because that year, Valencia won the Copa del Rey, but they were dangerously close to relegation, and Koeman was sacked before the end of the season. I have never in my life, I was at that final, the Copa del Rey in 2008 at the Vicente Calderon, never in my life seen a man just win a cup look so utterly depressed and entirely isolated. No one celebrated with him. He got on the team bus on his own at the end. There was a real sense that, so what? You've won the cup. You're going to get sacked in a few days' time anyway, which happened. He was sacked, I think it was 6 days later. And there was a sense as well that, you know, they won the Copa del Rey because that was a demonstration of the quality of the players that he had and how good they could have been if he had been able to do the things that he wanted to do, or if he'd been able to reach the dressing room, which he wasn't able to do. Now, this situation does have some parallels, but it's not quite the same thing.
OK, just to end the Messi talk here, though, Sid, does it make no difference at all if Bartomeu does resign? Does it look like Messi's still going regardless?
Look, I think Bartomeu is a cause of this situation. I think he is part of the consequence, but I think he's no longer part of the solution. I think it's gone beyond him now. I don't think it's a case of saying, here, I'll resign if you stay. Also, bear in mind, why would it be? Given that Bartomeu would resign, but the board of directors would remain the same, the vice president would become the president, the whole situation would fundamentally not change, except that Bartomeu himself would have gone. And I think when Bartomeu suggested this, I think Lionel Messi's camp will have looked at this and thought, yeah, nice try. You know, it's an attempt to kind of bring Messi out into the open, an attempt to try and get Messi to speak up, which Messi will do. But Messi will do when it suits him, when the time is right for him. There will be some sort of public statement or interview, but it won't be because Bartomeu says so. And it bearing, you know, barring an absolute miracle now, I think Bartomeu stepping down, if indeed he does, makes absolutely no difference to Messi's determination to leave. If Messi does a U-turn now, it won't be because of the president.
A quick look at the front page of Marca, so it must be true. It was talk of a swap deal for Antoine Griezmann and João Félix between Atleti and Barcelona. Barcelona have said it is totally false, but could you see anything like that being a good fit, Craig Burley?
Well, again, I mean, you know, with Antoine Griezmann going back to his old club where he had, you know, huge success. But I go back to my point about a new coach comes in, you know, a clean sweep with a broom. We know how talented Griezmann is. And so, maybe, look, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater here. You can't, you can't lose all your top players or 60, 70% of your top players and rebuild that quickly. So he's going to have to keep some of them. And I believe, you know, Antoine Griezmann can still perform at Barcelona if he's played in the right position. And also, if Messi goes, we don't have to have that, you know, stepping on each other's toes kind of scenario. So I would say at the moment that that looks unlikely. I mean, João Félix has really struggled this season. Said he'll know better than me at Atletico Madrid. I mean, he found himself on the bench towards the end of the season as well. So the big money signings there haven't really worked out. But if I was Antoine Griezmann, I don't think I'd be quite ready to chuck the towel in at Barcelona just yet.
Before I do go to Xhaka on Griezmann, just Sid, on João Félix, is that the wrong fit for him, a club like Atleti, and was it all along?
Well, in truth, that's what we all thought. We all thought, is this the kind of player and the kind of coach and the kind of environment in which he can shine? Also, he's a very young player. Now, of course, we all got very, very excited when last summer in New York, they scored 7 goals past Real Madrid, and he was absolutely wonderful. In the first couple of weeks of the season, he played very, very well indeed. But I think that's a doubt. That said, I mean, as Craig's already pointed out, with changes of manager, I also think just changes of season, you know, changes of mindset and conditions and context means that just because João Félix had a fairly difficult first season doesn't mean he can't succeed at Atletico Madrid. But I think it's entirely legitimate to pose the question that you've posed, and that's been part of the debate in Spain about whether this is, yeah, the right player, but at the wrong club.
Xhaka, just to end this then, Griezmann, is that the player to build around if Lionel Messi does leave Barcelona?
I think Barcelona have no choice but to give that a go. I mean, who else is there if Luis Suarez has already been told he's surplus to requirements? Listen, I understand the swap deal between João Félix and Griezmann, if all things were to stay exactly as they are. And despite how Griezmann left Atletico Madrid, I think fans, as we know, are fickle. You score a couple of goals and all may be forgotten. And maybe João Félix needs a new challenge, because given his own frustration. But if you're Antoine Griezmann or part of Griezmann's camp, and you know that Luis Suarez has been told he's surplus to requirements, Lionel Messi, that whole situation is still up in the air. This might be the perfect opportunity for you to establish yourself as Barcelona's star in going forward, as the player that they can build their team around. So as much sense as it may say, as it may make, as rosily as this may be painted, you do absolutely nothing until the Lionel Messi situation is sorted. Only then can you make an informed decision.
Craig, quick question. Who's the better player, Antoine Griezmann or Philippe Coutinho?
Well, I think an informed Antoine... I mean, they're both... Sorry about this, but they're both great players. I mean, you know... But given the context of it, you know, with Messi leaving probably and Suarez leaving probably, Antoine Griezmann becomes a much bigger piece of this chess match for Barcelona. And so we clearly know he has the talent. He'll never get the goals that Messi has got, and nobody will. But I think he becomes so much more important for them. And so, whatever they do with Coutinho is what they do. But they cannot afford, in my opinion, and Shaq touched on it, they can't afford in one go to lose Luis Suarez, Lionel Messi, and a World Cup winner, an underperforming one at that, and Antoine Griezmann.
That could be a very different-looking Barcelona next season. We thank Sid Lowe for joining us. Shaka and Craig will be back for Extra Time. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Thiago Silva to Chelsea is confirmed. It's a one-year deal initially with the option to extend for a further year. It follows his medical, which was completed in Milan. Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop still with me. Craig, how much does this help Chelsea in their quest to challenge the likes of Liverpool and Man City next season?
I think it's a big help. I mean, although it's not ideal signing a player who I think is going to be 36 very soon, but as a player who's just played in the Champions League final, as a player who is hugely experienced, is still fit and sharp enough, and can organise and lead that back line, a back line that really struggled for most part of the season and was a big reason why Chelsea tailed off towards the end and struggled really to make that top four. Look, there's no inherent risk here. Apart from the fact it might not work, there's no financial outlay apart from salary. And so I think it's an excellent signing short term when you consider the dearth of real quality centre-halves out there, that almost every top club are chasing the good ones. They're going to cost a lot of money. Chelsea have been spending money in other positions. This, for me, makes absolute sense. And I think Frank Lampard will be hoping that he can bring the organisational qualities that he's brought to club and country over the last decade or so.
As Craig mentioned, Shaka, we've seen Chelsea signing player after player, but still no word on a goalkeeper. And it is said that a starting goalkeeper is on their wish list.
Yeah, but that was always going to be a bigger problem than I think many suggested, or you would think, given the transfer fee that Chelsea paid for Kepa, given the wages that he'd be on. You have to be prepared to take a huge cut in moving him on and probably pick up a part of his salary. That's easier said than done. Also, in replacing him, whoever comes in will want to be put on just as much money as Kepa had been on. So it gives Frank Lampard a real headache. And as much as they continue to sign, as much as they continue to strengthen defensively, and I'm with Craig here, I think the signing of Thiago Silva is a significant step in the right direction. I think it comes for nothing if you and in particular the centre halves in front of him don't have the trust in the goalkeeper behind them. That continues to be an issue. So while everything is starting to take shape, I still think there are glaring holes for Frank to address.
If they can fix that, Craig, might we be looking at a revolution at Chelsea under Frank Lampard?
Well, Lampard himself has still got to prove himself in a managerial capacity. I mean, he's there with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Man United, who many, myself included, have question marks about. So Frank Lampard's not a stupid guy. He's a very clever fella. He understands the need that Chelsea have, and he understands the more players that he brings in and the more Roman Abramovich spends, the more pressure he's going to be under to peg back that gap, okay, and eventually challenge. Now, we've seen the marker set down by both Manchester City and Liverpool over the last two or three seasons. These two teams have been relentless in their league campaigns, and it's going to take the kind of money that they're spending. It's going to take consistency, and it's going to take a manager who can show he can get the job done. City and Liverpool went out and got themselves two of the best coaches in European and world football. There's no doubt about that. what United and Chelsea have are two managers trying to prove themselves in teams that are trying to rebuild. That's difficult in itself, never mind trying to hunt down the two at the top. But given the fact the players, and we're talking about Chelsea here, that the players they have brought in so far, if they can solve one or two more positions, I don't see any reason why they can't at least put the Cities and the Liverpools of this world under pressure.
There were one manager who did take a big step into proving himself is Mikel Arteta at Arsenal, winning the FA Cup with them last season. His side will be in action in the Community Shield against Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, the Premier League winners. It's the Premier League curtain raiser. Shaka, will both sides be taking this one seriously this weekend?
I think they should. Listen, Liverpool clearly wanted to hit the ground running. As good as they were over the whole of last season, they left a lot to be desired after the lockdown. So they want to be addressing that. At the same time, and you mentioned Arteta, given his rebuild, given the expectation of Arsenal fans, and certainly a certain level of self-expectation from Mikel Arteta, this is a good test for them to see how far they've come, how much more work they have to go. As of right now, I still don't think they finished top four. Arteta will want to disagree with that, but he has to go out and prove it on the pitch and against Liverpool, a perfect opportunity to do that and give that team some confidence in this top four chase of theirs.
There is work to do for him, though, Craig, this coming season. They finished eighth in the league last season. How much of it depends on Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang sticking around?
Lots, because, you know, you take that 30 or so goals out of the equation. You take his threat, his leadership. Don't forget he's the captain. So they need to keep him. You know, it's crystal clear because you lose him, you lose the goals, and financially it's going to be almost impossible to bring that kind of ilk of player in. But Arsenal are on a roll just now. You know, Arteta's on a roll. So I think, like Liverpool, they'll take this game very seriously. They beat Man City in the semi-final of the FA Cup. They then beat Chelsea. In the final, as we know, Arteta wins his first trophy. It's another trophy at stake in the Community Shield. You want to start the season well, see how your players are in terms of the fitness. But from Liverpool's perspective, they were so good last year, they won the league so easy that it kind of tailed off for them at the end because it didn't really mean so much. So they lost a bit of momentum towards the end of the season. They obviously were not playing in the Champions League after being knocked out by Atletico Madrid. And we know Jurgen Klopp is a hugely demanding manager of his players. And he'll want to build that momentum again for a defence of a title that hopefully, from an outsider's perspective, there's going to be three or four teams coming at him. And so he'll be very aware of this and he will not want any casual play from his team. So I think we're going to see an excellent final, but I think we're going to see a Liverpool side that are looking to get out the blocks and onto that front foot again.
It's always seen Shaka as a way to make a statement at the beginning of the season. So with what Craig's saying and with everything that's at stake for Liverpool this coming season, is it more important for Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool to make that statement?
Oh, no, not at all. Not for Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool. I think it's important for Arteta and Arsenal to make that statement, just given their own need to prove to themselves that they can compete at the highest level. But Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool know that, not just what we saw of last season, but the season before. You whether you win or lose, it, when you're in a position such as Liverpool are in, it's by no means the be-all and end-all. It just shows maybe what you need to address. You take the result for what it is. This is a bigger game for Arsenal, no question.
I just wanted to remind you guys that the last time these two sides faced off in this competition was 18 years ago. It was Arsene Wenger and Gerard Houllier on the benches, and the stars were Thierry Henry and Michael Owen. You guys know all about those days. Do you remember them, Craig?
Oh, absolutely. The good, they were, Shaq, what were they? They were the good old days.
The good old days, yeah. That's where we are now, Craig. We refer to our careers as the good old days. Back in the day.
Back in the good old days. And back here tomorrow on ESPN FC, we'll be looking back on that game between Arsenal and Liverpool in the FA Community Shield. And you can catch that game on ESPN Plus. Dan Thomas and Craig Burley will take you all the way up to it with a special preview. But if you are of the digital persuasion, you can join myself, Alexis Nunez, Don Hutchison, Shaka, and Katie Nolan will be speaking to Andy Robertson on our special live preview, which you'll be able to stream on the ESPN app and Twitter pages, as well as ESPN FC's YouTube and Facebook pages. And ahead of that game at 7:30 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus, you can catch the Women's Community Shield. It's the first time since 2008 that the Community Shield for the women has been contested. It is between Super League champions Chelsea and FA Cup holders Man City. And we hopefully will get a chance to see US player Sam Mewis make her competitive debut. Ahead of it, she talks all about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a challenge, but I think that's one of the reasons why I came here was to really be challenged at a high level and to get to compete. And it's exciting to, again, be new to this club and representing it, but it's an honor, and I'm happy that we're going to be tested early on so that we know what to work on and how to grow for the rest of the season.
So once again, you can catch that game on ESPN Plus. And also, would you look at this? ESPN Plus is your new home for the Scottish Premiership. Here are the games that you can catch this coming weekend. Kilmarnock against Dundee United, Livingston, Ross County, St Johnstone, St Mirren, and it leads all the way up to Hamilton against Stephen Gerrard's Rangers side. We've heard that Stevie Nicol will not be leaving his couch. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. At the time of recording, US international Weston McKennie, 21 years old, has all but signed for Juventus. Casey Keller joining us now. What does he offer and what will he bring to the Serie A giants, Casey?
Well, I think that's going to be the big question. I mean, I think Weston's a young player who broke in at Schalke pretty young. And, you know, he's a honest, hardworking, you know, central defensive midfielder. You know, the question mark is when you go to a club the size of Juve, you know that there's a huge number of players that you're competing with. I mean, you look at guys like Rabiot and Bentancur, and now they bring in, you know, Arthur for, you know, 70 some million from Barcelona. So he understands, I'm sure, that it's going to be difficult to get on the pitch. But when you have that kind of opportunity presented to you to go to a club like Juventus, and I love the confidence that he shows, that he says, I'm willing to go here, fight for an opportunity to get on the pitch. Now, you have Matuidi who's left. You're thinking they're trying to get rid of Khedira and maybe Aaron Ramsey as well. So there could be some chances. Maybe you got to just hope for it. That's the sad part. You got to hope for maybe an injury or something to give yourself an opportunity. But I love the kid's confidence.
Yeah, because he's obviously hoping to break that starting 11, the midfield, as you mentioned there. You could say more about creativity and passing, Craig. So is there a chance that with what he brings, he might just actually make his way into that starting lineup?
Well, it's going to be a big period for him, isn't it? When he walks in that dressing room for the first time, it's going to be a bit of a wow moment when he looks around. And sometimes, you know, youngsters can crumble at that. But as Casey mentioned, he seems a very confident young man. But even for one so confident, it's still going to be difficult. But look, he's going to offer Juventus, as you said, something slightly different. Now, we know Blaise Matuidi over the period with that lovely left foot has been very dynamic about getting around the field, getting up, getting back, really working that left side and that central midfield area. I mean, Juventus got him for a very cheap price from PSG not too long ago. And it's maybe a role that they feel Weston McKennie can come in and learn and mature. He has the energy, the drive, and he has the experience now for a youngster having played in Germany. But it's going to be interesting to see just how new coach and very inexperienced coach Andrew Pirlo sees this young man's involvement in the team going forward.
Because, Casey, there was interest from Premier League clubs as well, albeit Premier League clubs that aren't competing in the Champions League. But obviously a player like McKennie's been used to playing. We see in the Bundesliga young players getting their chance. Is there an argument to be made that the Premier League at one of these clubs may have been a better fit for him for playing time and development than Juventus?
Well, I think players have to weigh that when they go to, you know, any kind of decision on which club they're going to go to if they have options. And you know, I think if you end up going to a club like Juve and playing very sparingly, then maybe you kind of look back on it and you say, well, maybe it wasn't quite the right decision because really at you know, he's about to turn 22. He's been used to being, you know, in the last couple years, a pretty regular in the Schalke side. To then go to a club, you know, so big like Juventus, who's won, you know, Serie A 9 years in a row and are not necessarily looking to win Serie A again. They almost feel like that they're going to, but they want to build a squad that can compete to win a Champions League. And again, it could be difficult for Weston to find playing time. And at 22, you know, that's a tough time to spend a season without playing. So, yeah, maybe it would be better to go to a smaller club at this stage. But sometimes as a player, when you have an opportunity, it's not like opportunities to go to clubs the size of Juventus come around every day. So with that opportunity, you know, and look, it looks like it's a loan, you know, spell. Is it a case where, yes, there's a mandatory option? Maybe there's not a mandatory option. Who knows? But I love the fact that he's gambling on himself to see if he can make this work.
Yeah, absolutely. The reports say that if it's over 60% playing time, then that obligation to buy would kick in. So it would be interesting to see how much he is used. On top of his confidence in trying to break that 11, Craig, he has also cited the Cristiano Ronaldo factor. Obviously, it's a chance to play alongside a player like that. How much will he benefit him and learning from him on the pitch and the training field every day?
Oh, I think when you go and you work with top players and you watch them train, and my experience, you know, watching the guys that I played with who I would consider top players, the Vialis, the Zolas, the Hullets, the Henrik Larsens, Fabrizio Ravanelli, these guys, people wonder, well, you know, is it just talent? No. These guys work harder than the average player. They put more hours in. They put more effort in. They put more thought into it. And I think for any youngster going in to see how has a player like Cristiano Ronaldo done what he's done for over 10 years, 50 goals a season are there or there. But how do they achieve that? They don't just pitch up and it all of a sudden happens. And so you go into these places and you see how different clubs do different things and how every day is so demanding. And I'm not saying it's not like that in Schalke. I'm sure it is. But we're talking about a different quality of player here at Juventus. So if you don't go in and learn from these kind of setups and scenarios, then you're never going to learn. But I suppose here what we have, and going back to the question you asked, Casey, is the opportunity is just too good to turn down. Now, you know, we have the Euros in 2021 now, but the last time I looked, the United States was not part of Europe. So he doesn't have to worry about that. So he's got almost 2 years till the next World Cup. Now, if the World Cup was in a year's time, then it's a concern going somewhere that you're maybe not going to get regular game time. But I think he's got a little bit of time in his hands here in terms of major tournaments. And so he's probably looked at it and thought, do you know what? I'm going to go in here. If it doesn't work for me, I'm going to take the experience. I'm going to learn from these players. I am going to get some game time. But if it doesn't work, I can go back and I can take what I learned from this period and I can add it on to the rest of my career.
Well, obviously, they can't play in the Euros, the US. But what we are seeing, Casey, is many young players from the US playing in the top European leagues, the likes of Tyler Adams. You've got Gio Reyna, Christian Pulisic. Now Weston McKennie in Serie A. How good is it for US soccer to be seeing this happening?
Well, I think it's great because I think there was a situation probably, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, where, you know, there was quite a few players, particularly playing in England, players playing in Germany, that then obviously added to that good balance of for the U.S. national team of, you know, guys in MLS kind of fighting to get better, guys in Europe coming in, bringing that experience. And then there was a little time period where there just seemed to be a group that it just didn't work out for them in Europe. And now you're seeing kind of that good balance, young players going straight to Europe, having some success, breaking into their teams. You're seeing, you know, Christian Pulisic making a $60 million transfer to Chelsea and really building into a very good season there. And, you know, Gio Reyna, young kid, 17, breaking in and getting a lot of games for a club the size like Dortmund. And we'll be really interested to see how his progression goes this next season. And then now you look at someone like Weston, who you know, like I said, did things the right way. 18 years old, started getting some playing time for Schalke, working his way into a regular starter, and now having a transfer opportunity where it looked like he had several options to maybe go to England, but he chooses to really battle at Juventus. So I think Greg Berhalter, U.S. national team, has to be very happy with the way some of these young players have progressed in Europe.
Yeah,
I think it's crystal clear, and Jurgen Klinsmann was frowned upon when he talked about it 2 or 3 years ago about the players have to be playing in the best leagues. Now, maybe the way Klinsmann went about it was rather brash, but it stands true. And Casey knows this from his time as a player and the success that he had with the national team was there's a lot of guys out there playing in the top leagues and you can only get better. And that doesn't mean that there's going to be guaranteed success at national team level, but I think it gives you a better chance, and it gives, as Casey said, the coach a better fist to go and do the job. And you know, yes, it's good to have players playing in Major League Soccer if that's the league that you follow. But the bottom line is the players, the top quality players, and if you want to improve your national team, the bulk of these guys have to be out there playing at the kind of level some of these boys are playing at now on a weekly basis. They're learning the game. They're playing with better players. And guess what? They're getting better. And it is great to see some of the platforms that some of these young United States boys are getting in the top European leagues.
Absolutely. And we do wish Weston McKennie the best of luck with Juventus. We'll be able to see him next season right here on this network when he does get those playing minutes. And this weekend, there's a full slate of MLS games set to be played. And at the time of recording, that is still the case. You will be able to see 7 of them on ESPN+. Also on ESPN+, it is the grand final in the A-League. Top seed Sydney taking on Melbourne City. You have to be up bright and early for this one. 4:30 a.m. Eastern on Sunday morning. I'll be waking up for it. I hope you do too.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you so much for joining us on the latest edition of ESPN FC. You can join us over on Extra Time, and I'm telling you, you must stick around until the end because we are talking about the delights of English food. Yes, you heard me right, the delights of English food coming up on Extra Time. Welcome into Extra Time. I did say it was just Craig and Shaka on the show, but unlike Messi, Sid Lowe has decided to stick around a little longer, so he will be joining us for this edition. But the first question
you said,
is
you
for
should have
Craig
said,
and
I'm
Shaka.
Performed an embarrassing U-turn. It's an embarrassing U-turn. I've changed my mind and back down pathetically, having insisted I was out and sent a bureau fax to say there's no way I'm going on Extra Time. But look, here I am, spineless.
Well, thanks for sticking around, Sid. I would put this question to Shaka, but I think I already know the answer, so it's going to go to you, Craig. It's from Dan, and he said, do you prefer to play on a team that played short passes and built out of the back, or a team that kicked the ball up the field every chance they got?
Well, I prefer to play on a team that wins. But, I mean, football has evolved. The game has evolved in terms of the way, and Shaq will know this, the way the goalkeeper starts off moves, the way the centre-halves position themselves. Not that it was bash it up the field and chase it in the 90s and early 2000s. It wasn't, but it was a lot more balanced. And there wasn't as much risk-taking in and around your own penalty area. So that's not something we were accustomed to working on. But no, I was never fond of a team that was just hoofing it up the field and then trying to win the second balls. But we did that on occasions as well during some games. But yeah, I think every player would prefer to get the ball on the ground and play some short passes. I think that's why we play the game to start with.
Shaka,
what do you think my answer would be, Kay? Let me ask you that.
Yesterday on the show, you said you never touched the ball more than twice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
that doesn't answer my question.
So I think you're going to hoof it up the pitch.
That's wrong. You see, you're wrong. I'd prefer to play in a side that passed the ball out the back. Now, admittedly, I'd be no good in that side because I was hoofing it. But I'd prefer to play in a side that played the kind of football that Craig just spoke about.
Okay.
Kay, he was lucky during the game to touch the ball twice with his hands. Never mind his feet.
And those things when he was picking it up out of the back of the net anyway.
He used to get it out of the back of the net.
Surely
go on, Sid.
Surely Shaka would have liked to have played. What did you call it? Oh, every school had different names for it. But I'm assuming that Shaka would have liked to play rush goalie so he could go bombing up the pitch and leave someone else in nets for a bit. Did you call that rush goalie at your school? It depends which school you're at, I suppose. Everyone has different names for it.
I didn't call it. I can't remember what we call it. But that was me. I used to be out on the pitch all the time. I'm a frustrated striker, really.
Well, there you go.
Of course you are. Shaka, Arps wants to know, do you expect Thiago to settle down straight away in Klopp's system after completing the move to Liverpool?
Yes. I think Thiago is an incredible talent. I really do. And he's so different from everything that Liverpool has. I see no real issue, despite the differences between what Klopp does and Bayern have done for years since his arrival under Pep Guardiola. I think Thiago fits in very easily to any team that plays that kind of football.
Sid, actually, I'd like to get a follow-up from you on that one. Do you think Thiago will slot straight into that Liverpool side?
Yeah, I think in a way, Shaq's hit the nail on the head in that I think that it's true that Thiago is, on the face of it, a very different style to Liverpool's midfield. And I interviewed Thiago in the build-up to the... It must have been the 2018 World Cup, so a couple of years ago, and we were talking about styles, and he was talking about how Spain obviously have this identity of keeping the ball down, short passing, very technical, very positional. And we were talking a little bit about England, and whether England actually lacked that kind of midfielder. And his response was a response about Liverpool. He said, well, you could say that, but look at Liverpool's midfield. He said, look at the way they play. Look how much of the midfield they eat up, how dynamic they are, how aggressive they are. And although it's a totally different style to him, he was hugely impressed by this, hugely impressed by the way in which they could develop a style that worked for them, even with different types of players. Now, and the reason why I say that I think part of Shaq's answer is the answer, is that it's true that Thiago offers something different, but I think that's a good thing. So he can have someone who can fit in and adapt to a slightly different midfield shape and a slightly different style, but can also give you the kind of things, you know, the quality of touch, the pass filtered through small gaps, the ability to maybe produce only one really telling pass a game, but enough to put someone clean through one-on-one, or enough to create a really clear chance. And I think it's precisely Thiago's differentness, precisely the fact that it looks like he sort of might not fit on the face of it, that makes him so interesting, because I think he gives that Liverpool that little bit of a twist and that little bit extra, not least because I suspect that this season Liverpool will find teams playing against him in a very different and more defensive way.
Craig and Shaka, Frank McManaman says, in your playing careers, did you take pre-season matches seriously, or were they just a way to get your legs moving again? Craig.
Well, I mean, you take them serious in terms of you use pre-season matches for one reason and one reason only. It is to gain your match fitness for the start of your domestic season. Now, if you can play well and win along the way, then fine. But, you know, first and foremost in pre-season is the one thing you want to avoid coming back from pre-season is injuries, because unfit players and muscle injuries happen more often. And the second thing is you're chasing your fitness and your confidence. And also, you may, like Barcelona, we've talked about a lot in the last 24, 48 hours, they have a new coach in Ronald Koeman. So you're now looking at a change of shape to the team, potentially, some new teammates coming in. So you're using all these things to build up to the start of the season. And I always say, and I don't think, and it's, I suspect it's different from a goalkeeper's perspective, but even when the English Premier League season started, for example, I was never up to full fitness, and I don't think any player was, because you can't mirror a pre-season game, Kay, with a competitive Premier League or domestic game in any country that you're playing in. And once those games start, they're so fast and so different to pre-season that it takes you 3, 4, 5, maybe even half a dozen games of your domestic season to really catch your fitness. And so to cut out this waffling long story short, you're mainly using them to get your fitness.
Shaka, was it the same for you?
Yeah, it was. I felt, regardless of pre-season, it would take 6 games for me to really get my timing right, my match fitness right. But to Frank McManaman's question, it depends on the game, when it fell in pre-season, and also, you know, when I joined that club. So I say that because when you first join a club, you take every pre-season game seriously, because this is your opportunity to make an impression on your fans, to establish yourself in that team. If you're already established in the team, the first game or two, you're just trying to get the rust out of your legs, as Frank puts it. The next two or three games, I would use to work on aspects of my game that I felt I needed to. Whether, you know, I wanted to come for crosses, so I'd take this game just to come for every single cross, regardless, or whether I was stroking the ball very beautifully out of the back, as I often did. And then
shanking it.
As you came closer to the start of the season, now you're trying to put all those parts back together. And you're taking the game a little bit more seriously. So it varied from game to game.
Manuel, Shaka, Neuer. Come back, Kay.
Just quickly, Kay, can I backtrack a little bit to Thiago? Just briefly, won't go on. We don't have to put that tweet back up. I know that's too difficult for some people.
That was six tweets ago.
But let me just say.
That was six tweets ago.
I think Thiago is a wonderful player, right? Clearly. Huge fan. But I don't think it's as simple as some people think, just to walk into this Liverpool midfield. I really don't. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, there's a midfield that operated damn well last year. Now, as Sid mentioned, he does bring so many different facets. I get that. But so does Gini Wijnaldum. So does Jordan Henderson, the Football Writers Player of the Year. Now, Jordan Henderson does not have the talent of Thiago, but he brings so many other facets to the game. He's got leadership. He's got defensive qualities, and he has the energy. And then you have the likes of Fabinho. So whilst Thiago is a marvellous addition for Liverpool, absolutely great signing, I don't think it's going to be that simple for him on a weekly basis just to walk in this team. And as good as he is, I mean that in all sincerity.
Yeah, Stevie Nichols actually said the same, Craig. I'm going to go to you next. It's comeback.
All right, can I change then?
I'm going to go the other way. I might change your mind. I thought you might want to backtrack on that one now too.
I seriously think that he, of course, he's going to play, but maybe this is wrong. I don't know, but I think it's easier to get in the Bayern Munich midfield at the moment, even as successful as they were potentially, than to get in the Liverpool midfield.
So the person you were making fun of for not bringing the tweet up, they're going to clip you saying that, and we'll remind you of it later in the season, Craig.
I knew the tweet wasn't going to come back up because nobody's sharp enough there.
Let me just throw something into that mix now that we've gone back to Thiago, which is that I suspect that what happened this year is that it won't be a case of getting in that midfield and being a starter. I think we'll see a midfield of, five, maybe six men who will all play a lot of games this year. I don't think it'll be a case of looking at the midfield and going, right, Fabinho, Wijnaldum, Henderson, whose place does he take? I don't think it'll be that. I think it'll be, some weeks he'll play where Henderson plays, other weeks he'll play where Wijnaldum plays, some weeks he'll play as the deep midfielder, which we've seen him adapt to at Bayern Munich, which was never really his position, but he's played really well as the deepest of the three. You know, some weeks you'll see Oxlade-Chamberlain play in there. You'll get games for Keita as well. I think you're basically probably looking at a midfield five rotating through three positions rather than a case of, right, who's in? Because I think who's in will be probably have a different answer every game.
So come back.
Yeah, good point said. And you don't make many. Somebody mark this down the time and the date.
Comeback King 36 is now Comeback King 78, waiting to get this question answered. Craig, it seems that winning.
This is a good question then. It's been waiting long enough.
It seems that winning is not enough in modern football.
It's got even less chance of making a comeback because the time's run out on him.
Now it's Comeback King 84. It seems that winning is not enough in modern football. Fans expect an attractive style of play. Was this the case when you were a professional?
Yeah, it was. And they expected to be entertained. But I don't know how to put this. The balance was different in the late 90s and early 2000s when I was playing, Shaq was playing. The balance of what was accepted and what wasn't, I think, was different. I think now, because of TV and because of finances that clubs are able to spend and because of the cost of a supporter going to the game with his family or his partner or whatever, I think fans are more demanding. And, you know, I think they expect to be entertained. And when they see other teams with budgets that are not a Man United or a PSG or a Man City or a Barcelona, when they see a Leicester City do what they did in 2016, and we see these other teams playing football, I think fans are more demanding if they go along and see their team hoof it up the park for 90 minutes. I don't think there's too many clubs find that acceptable anymore. There was a few did it back in the day, but there was more a balanced approach back when I was playing. It was a little bit of a hybrid model. Now I would call it the sort of crazy nuts model where they're absolutely passing the ball out to somebody 6 yards outside their own goal with somebody pressing them. That just never happened. That was suicidal back a few years ago.
I don't think there's any fan base more synonymous with wanting their team to see and expect attractive football, Sid, than the Barcelona fan base.
Yeah, well, and of course this has been part of the, if you like, the background noise over the last 4 or 5 years. It wasn't just that Barcelona had those incredibly embarrassing Champions League nights in Rome and Anfield and now, of course, in Lisbon, but even in Paris, even in Turin. It was more that there was this debate about the way they were playing. And of course, you know, you look at the way that some fans were unhappy with Ernesto Valverde because it was partly rooted in a perceived sense of a loss of identity. Now, obviously, you can ask all sorts of questions about whether you can still maintain that identity without Xavi, without Iniesta, with an ageing team, with the kind of players they've got. And I think Valverde was the master of the possible, if you like. But of course, a club that has a very strong kind of puritanical streak running through it, that you're absolutely right. There is no club, I don't think, that has that degree of, if you like, kind of self-obsession about it's not just winning, it's about how you win.
I'm going to stick with you.
The last time I heard somebody use that word was Stevie Nicol. Said puritanical.
Which word was that? Oh, Stevie Nicol, a Puritan. Yeah, we all know Stevie's monk-like in his Puritanism.
It rolled off his tongue.
Has he been eating the dictionary for breakfast, Craig?
Along with the shepherd's pie.
Sid, Abhiraj Verma says, why have Spanish teams like Real Madrid, Atletico and Barcelona been so quiet in the transfer market? None of them have made a single signing this season.
Right, well, first things first, what's the date today? We're at the back end of August, aren't we?
We are.
I think we've got till the I think it's the second week of October before this market is closed. So first of all, calm down, don't worry, they could still be coming. But actually, in truth, there is a much more simple answer, which is I think they will continue to be quiet between now and then, except possibly Barcelona, of course, depending on what happens with Messi and how they try and find a way around that. And the answer is finance, economics. Those three clubs were hit incredibly hard by the coronavirus crisis, not least because they were largely on edge anyway. The financial ability to generate money right across the board, not just at the top in Spain, is much less than the Premier League, for example. So that means there's much less kind of movement going on around the clubs, much less of the sort of, if you like, the middling tier clubs buying players. And so that's the short answer. There isn't really the money to make it happen.
Shaka, Ian Gregoire says, does Arsenal have the most delusional fan base in the Premier League? And will they finish in the top four next season?
The second part of that question is easier to answer. No, I don't see Arsenal finishing in the top four, not given what everybody else continues to do. Listen, I appreciate what Arteta's doing, but I that's not where my money is going. All fans are delusional in terms of the first part of the question. Every fan right about this point in the season are thinking either their club is going to win the league or finish in the top four. And that is almost across the board. So that goes with part of the territory.
Craig, can you answer the first part of the question in whether Arsenal fans are the most delusional fan base in the Premier League?
Well, I'm not going to besmirch Arsenal fans because I'm very much a people person these days. And
you've changed.
And so I'm not going to sit here like Shaka and cast aspersions on a very generically on a whole fan base. I just want to be loved by fans. That's the new motto for me going forward. Love me, please.
Craig has had time to reflect during lockdown. He's been doing yoga and meditation, and he just wants to be loved. I knew it was coming, guys. James Poole says, rumour has it Messi has been house hunting in Redcar. Hashtag Messi to Borough. Hashtag up the Borough. Shaka, you must know about the delights of the nightlife in Redcar down on the seafront.
I do not know the delights of nightlife in Mesbroke. We have discussed this. I have never been out in Middlesbrough. Never been to Tall Trees.
Redcar?
I don't know where that is.
You know what? He's the right size for Redcar because a rumour has it he's been spotted coming out the traps on the 91 favourite.
Sid, have you ever partied in the Northeast? Shaka denies that he ever has.
In the Northeast, I've never been to Middlesbrough. Never been to Hull. I've never been to Sunderland. I've been to Newcastle, but I don't think I've ever been out for a night out in Newcastle. So I'm afraid the answer is no. I mean, I've got to come quite a long way. You've got to get me down to Sheffield before I can start talking about places to go out.
All right, fair enough. So that's both Shaka and Sid who haven't been out in the Northeast. Craig, I never actually did ask you. Please tell me that you have.
Yes.
Okay.
Name a country. Name a place on the planet.
International party man Craig Burley has partied everywhere.
Galapagos Islands, been there. Had a night out, there's a bar. Just up the corner on the left-hand side.
Do you think would Lionel Messi enjoy a Parmo? That's the real question here.
It is the question.
Could Messi eat a Parmo?
It is the eternal question, Sid. And I don't know if we're ever going to find out the answer.
It's the only thing we need to know. The rest of this show can just be binned. We just need to discuss what's a Palmo.
A Palmo is a regional dish from Middlesbrough, which is an escallop of chicken or pork.
A regional dish.
It is. Listen, it's a delicacy in the hometown of Middlesbrough.
The idea of regional dish makes it sound like a delicacy.
It's an escallop of chicken or pork. So you've got your breadcrumbs. On top of that, you have bechamel sauce, mozzarella, cheddar cheese, garlic sauce, greasy chips on the sides. Voila. After a night out in the northeast, which only Craig knows about, nobody wants a kebab or a pizza. They want a Palmo. And that will end
extra time. Just briefly, if Messi does come to England, he's not made it, in my opinion, till he's sat in a curbside at 3 a.m. in the morning with a plastic fork eating fish chips and gravy sauce. Right? Once he's done that, he can do what he likes.
Yeah, topped with a Palmo. Topped with a Palmo, and then we'll all be happy. Thanks so much for joining us on Extra Time. That will do it. I'm going to go and think about Messi eating a Palmo.